Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is our Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired in the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, August 17th, 2013. This is episode 1005. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to a total of 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, MP3 players, home theater, GPS, CDMA. Seems like we were just here the other day, Heather.
It does.
So, did you see
week that was?
Did you see the movie? I'm gonna call it Waz. Jobs. Yeah.
No.
I don't know why. Went to see it with a bunch of people from TWIT on opening night, Thursday night, 9 p.m. First show. There were seven people in the whole theater, and we were five of them.
Oh. Well, you looked happy, or was the picture before you went to the movie that I saw?
That was before
Facebook.
We went in.
Okay.
So look, let me tell you what Steve Wozniak said. He was there. In fact, he's in the movie. He's a big part of the movie. In fact, there's a scene I doubt ever happened in which he tearfully, it's towards the end of the movie, says goodbye to Apple because it's not the same Apple it used to be. And he goes in, and Steve Jobs is busy. He says, get out of here. I saw Jobs tonight, said Woz. I thought the acting throughout was good. Not so. You know, I got to tell you one thing about Woz. He's very nice. He's a sweet guy. He doesn't, you know, he's not going to say anything mean. I remember reading that Ashton Kutcher, who plays Steve Jobs in the movie, learned how to walk like Steve Jobs.
Oh, no.
That's not how Steve Jobs walked. He was, I don't know what he was doing. It looked comedic. I think he was going for the My Left Foot Academy Award nomination kind of thing. It was Jobs as if he had a hard time walking. Jobs loved walking. Jobs walked more than any human alive. I suspect a lot of what was wrong with the film, says Woz, came from Ashton's own idea, own image of Jobs. Mm. Ashton made some disingenuous and wrong statements about me recently, including my supposedly having said the movie was bad, which was probably because Ashton believing pop press headlines, and that I didn't like the movie because I'm paid to consult on another one. These are examples of Ashton still being in character. Either film would have paid me to consult, but the Jobs one already had a written script. And I was turned off by the job script, but I still hope for a great movie. As to compromising, anyway, I guess a lot of this is Woz kind of saying bad things about Ashton. He says, I will add one detail left out of the film. When Apple decided not to reward early friends who helped, I gave them large blocks of my own stock. That's true, because it was right. And I made it possible for 80 other employees to get some stock prior to the IPO so they could participate in the wealth. I feel bad for many people I know well who were portrayed wrongly in their interactions with Jobs and the company. That was kind of my reaction. I realized as I sat through the movie, I actually knew some of these people. And I felt bad for them, including Woz, who I know pretty well.
And George Clooney has a cameo as you in the film.
That's right. And it's a wonderful moment. No, George Clooney and I are not in the film.
Now, he's an actor.
There's an actor. There is another Steve Jobs movie coming. This is the one that Woz did consult on, written by Aaron Sorkin. I don't think it'll be any more accurate, but at least the writing will sparkle. I've never been in a movie that made me both angry and bored, and it did both. Angry because it was such a terrible representation of what all of this meant and so forth, and bored because it was so long and boring.
Oh, no.
So it was like the worst of...
I might not see it
at all. I wouldn't.
It's the kind of thing that you watch while you're painting your toenails or something, right?
Yeah, you could watch it
on
demand.
Throw it on in the background.
Yeah.
because I do not like to be bored.
It just gets me because Ashton Kutcher throughout the most of the movie walks normally, and then all of a sudden at the end of the movie he's walking very strangely. I mean, really strangely.
What?
He's kind of leaning. He's kind of falling forward as he walks with his arms akimbo. And I've spent a long weekend with Steve. Played volleyball with Steve. Seen him many times at keynotes and events, and have never seen him walk like that. I don't like Ichabod Crane. I don't know what it was.
And clearly there's video of him to watch and imitate.
You know what? It's an actor saying, I need to do something to show my craft.
Or to help me think I'm embodying someone else.
You know, all Ashton Kutcher's got going for him is he looks pretty similar with the same beard. Anyway, I know that there are a lot of geeks who listen to this show, people who are very interested in the life and times of Steve Jobs, as we all should be. He was our Edison. He was, you know, our great inventor of our era. Maybe not so much inventor as a popularizer and a packager of technology, brilliant marketer, brilliant businessman. But, and, you know, a mixed bag as far as a, you know, human being goes, but I've had him yell at me, but that was in volleyball because I wasn't... given my all.
You're out of bounds, Laporte.
No, I was on his team, and he wasn't happy that I didn't. You know, really going for it. It was just a kind of a pickup game. But anyway, that's another matter.
You're like, I'm not going to skin my knees.
Yeah. No, I want you to get everything. I want you to stay here all day until you. No, he didn't say that.
Dig, baby, dig.
Anyway, yeah, just save your money. Yeah, you could see it on demand, or it'll be on HBO. I don't know. It'll be a way to watch it without paying for it. And I don't have high hopes for the other movie, although it will be a more prestigious production because of Aaron Sorkin and the people who are Sony's producing it. But, you know, if you really want to know about Jobs, there's a lot of great books, including, you know, some people felt that the Walter Isaacson biography wasn't great. It was written with Mr. Jobs' cooperation. He gave him many hours of interviews, as he was dying. So it's the closest we're going to get to a complete picture of Steve Jobs, and much better, frankly. Somebody in the chat room says, I think they already announced that Jobs will be on Netflix early next year. Might be sooner. In fact, if you want to see it in the theaters, I would hurry. I'm not kidding. Opening night. You know when they have the big deal? They used to do it at midnight. I think they realized nobody's going to come see this movie at midnight. So it was at 9 p.m. And... not a lot of people. Really not a lot of people. Okay, I was exaggerating. There was the five of us. There might have been 10 people. Generously 15 people in the theater. And they had put it in a big theater. I think they regret that now. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. If you want to tell me I'm wrong, that's always welcome. No, seriously. This is... One thing they talked about and they showed in the movie, which I thought was great, was the Homebrew Computer Club. They completely botched, of course, every aspect of it. But they did show Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs going there to show them the club, the Apple One, in a way that didn't really happen at all. But, you know, because the Homebrew Computer Club didn't like it because they're a bunch of fuddy-duddies. Not true. These were guys who were so into personal computing, and they were fascinated by what Woz had done. And they knew, they understood what Woz had done that was amazing. Anyway, they do talk about these computer groups. And while they're still around, I don't know how well subscribed they are. I think it's mostly older people who go to them. But you know what? That's what this is, really. This is a user group of the airwaves, a chance for us to get together. Because, you know, the computer industry, here we are 40 years later into the whole thing. Maybe 30. Into the whole thing, 20 years into the internet, and it's still they can't Microsoft can't figure out how to do this stuff. They can't figure out how to communicate it. Apple's going every which way. Google every way. So this Facebook. This is what we're here for. This is what we're here for. My friend Peter Krogh sent me a note about Instagram. There's still photographers are still upset about the Instagram terms of service, and Peter has written a whole thing about it, about if you're a pro or if you really want to hold on to your photos, why you should be careful about putting stuff on Instagram. He's a great photographer, one of my favorite, the author of The Damn Book, Digital Asset Management for Photographers, which I've mentioned several times. Really, really fabulous guy. And I'm going to put this in the show notes, a link to his post, his blog post about Instagram, because he says you really ought to know, you really ought to know what's what Instagram is claiming when you post pictures on there. Essentially, he's saying we are claiming everything. We claim the rights to everything. We've heard, we talked about this before. Instagram is owned by Facebook. It's probably worth reading just so you're aware, especially if you're a pro photographer. I'll put the link in the show notes at techguylabs.com, and we will go to the phones right after this. Yeah, let me get the link for you. He's the best.
Hey, we all love computers, he's but, you know, sometimes they don't love us back, especially when they crash.
It's on his website, The Damn Book. And let me put this in the chat room. We'll have a hard drive failure. That's why he should have made a short URL. It's thedambook.com/the-instagram-papers. As if that would... There it is in the middle of the page there. If I were going to buy a phone, would you choose the Galaxy S4, HTC One, or wait for the Motorola X? Tom, I've bought the first two, and I'm about to buy the third, so that's kind of, I'm the wrong guy to ask if you were going to buy a phone, because I buy them all. I'll give you a little tip, though, or a little insight. I have lent the Galaxy S. I gave up on the Galaxy S4 because it was the camera was unreliable, and there was so much stuff on it. That it was really bogging down. So I lent that to Iaz, who needed a phone. I'm carrying the HTC One, but I've rooted it and... Oops, I turned on this flashlight feature. Let's turn that off. I can't turn it off. I put a Viper ROM on there, which has, among other things, a flashlight if you hold the button on the top. I've rooted it and put a different Sense ROM on there. The Motorola X, I will pay for when it comes out. I can't buy it yet, obviously. So the one I have is a loaner. And I think that all three have different attributes that make them special. The Galaxy S4, despite all its cruft, has the best daylight camera of all of them, easily. Motorola X's camera is weak. It has potential, but I wonder if they could fix it with a software update. So I'm going to hold off on that one until they do ship it. The one I probably is the one I would get, and I would consider getting the Google edition. It will be available on Verizon at the end of the month. It's available now on AT&T. The one is really a nice piece of hardware. The dual speakers on front are really, if you ever listen to your phone, make it almost as good enough that you don't need external speakers. There's speakers here and here, which I really like. The big negative on the camera's very good, especially in low light. The big negative on the one is these weird buttons. You know, these companies are going to have to start doing what Google asked them to do, which is not have hardware buttons at all. But if you're going to have hardware buttons, do something more natural. The HTC does nothing. There's a home button and a back button. If you want to see recent applications, which you do a lot in Android, there's a dedicated button in, you know, Jelly Bean and Ice Cream Sandwich, but there isn't on this phone. You have to press and hold the home button, which I think is not ideal. I guess you get used to it. But I think this is the best power phone for people who really want Android power. I think the Moto X will end up being the best phone for most people. Really excellent. I like the Galaxy S4, but too much stuff on it. You know, I used to prefer hardware buttons until I really kind of sat down with a Google Experience phone, the Nexus 4, and just kind of played with it for a while, and I got used to it. And the Moto X is excellent. I do not think the iPhone is a competitor. You know, the problem with Apple is they aren't releasing phones faster than once a year, and they've just been lapped by Android. We'll see what the next iPhone holds. You can't base it on specs. You really have to hold the Moto X to kind of appreciate it, I think. I've owned every iPhone. I'm not currently recommending the iPhone except to people who really need it. Ah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. We're going to the phones right now. Heather Hammond taking the calls. Do you have a recommendation? Who should I speak to first, Heather? Oh, let me turn on your mic.
Whoops. I can turn on my mic, too.
You forget, don't you?
It's still new to me.
That's okay.
Let's swim across the big pond and talk to Ed in Norfolk.
Really?
Yeah.
England?
Yeah,
wow.
Line one.
Hey, Ed, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather.
Hi, Leo. Just wondering if you could help me choose a new laptop for photo editing.
All right, yeah. What kind of... Well, first of all, which photo editor do you use? Use Photoshop?
Photoshop, yeah.
All right, that's a very demanding program, and it takes advantage of the multi-core capabilities of the Intel chips. I would start by saying you want a fourth-generation i5 or maybe even i7, okay?
Yeah.
And when I say fourth-generation, I'm talking about the Haswell.
Haswell, yeah.
Yeah, that just recently came out for two reasons. Yeah. The Haswell is faster... for graphics, they put a better graphics engine. Now, many of the high-end laptops will have their own graphics engine from NVIDIA or ATI, but the motherboard, the built-in graphics on the Haswell are considerably better, but most importantly, because Haswell has the best battery life right now. So Haswell is what you're looking for. You want a good, accurate screen. That's another issue that people don't pay attention to unless you're a photographer and you want to get the best color gamut, G-A-M-U-T, gamut. That's a little tougher. You want a Windows machine or a Mac?
Windows.
So Macintoshes have very accurate screens. The MacBook Retina is extremely accurate. In Windows, I'm not sure who has the most accurate screens.
Yeah.
Mostly it's a memory issue because I have read reviews. I would look at Anand Tech. People like The Verge and so forth don't generally review things like color gamut. It's not the first thing they look at. I would say though Lenovo is a good one to look at. Are you getting Windows 8?
I'm not really sure yet. I'm still thinking.
I go back and forth on this, but ultimately it is the future of Windows.
You can
make Windows 8 behave more like Windows 7 with a couple of inexpensive or free programs. I recommend the $5 Start 8 from Stardock, which changes the desktop, gives it a start menu. And if you really want to go all the way, Modern Mix, also from Stardock, also $5, will turn the Metro, full-screen Metro apps into windowed apps. And then it's pretty much like Windows 7, but Windows 8 has some significant under-the-hood improvements. It's hard to recommend buying a 5-year-old operating system. It just is. So I'm moving towards saying get Windows 8. If you really can't live with the UI, you can modify it. Windows 8.1 will make some significant improvements. That'll be out in October now. We know that date. I think if you're going to do that, then you need a touch screen. I think with photo editing, you might even want a touch screen. The Lenovo Touch, the Carbon Touch is very nice. A number of people are saying Samsung, and I think Samsungs are pretty nice, too. They have some very nice thin light ones. Asus is good.
Yeah, I was looking at the Asus N560.
Yeah, that's an excellent laptop. And finally, I use an Acer. Now, so there are junky Acers and there are good Acers. Acer has always tried to make itself available at a very low cost, and those machines are way too junky, in my opinion. But the Acer, A-C-E-R-S, 7, the new one has Haswell and is quite nice. That's an ultrabook. That's a very light ultrabook.
Yeah.
I think, really most photographers use Macs because the color is the most accurate on Mac displays. They pay attention to that.
Okay, yeah.
But if you're going to use Windows, there are some good choices. And I'm going to have to do some research. I'm going to have to do some research and see which screens are the best in the Windows side. I'm not sure. I've seen reviews that talk about it, but I don't off the top of my head remember. Chumley in the chat room says, my Asus just broke. The screen fell off of it. That's not good. another good website for reviews. I agree. Money 2004 is PC Perspective. It's PCPER.com. And we'll kind of keep looking for you, Ed. I'm so glad you're listening in Norfolk. That's great. Keep listening. Louis, Phoenix, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Louis.
Is it Louie or Louis? What do you like?
Can I go by Lou?
Lou. We've talked before, haven't we? Hi, Lou.
I hate to admit it, but yes, we have.
Why do you hate to admit
Heather,
that?
I wasn't going to mention my previous call.
Yeah, no, that's all right. We don't, you know, some shows have this rule you can't call it once every 90 days, but hey, that's okay. If you can get through, you deserve to get on.
Question.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you use a non-touch second or third monitor with a touchscreen laptop, Ultrabook, or
Absolutely.
Tablet?
Absolutely.
And how does that work?
Well, you got touch on one, you don't have touch on the other. So one of the things about Windows 8 is that it's designed to use touch, mouse, keyboard equally. So you can do everything you could do with touch, you could do with either a mouse or a keyboard or both. So you're never left out of anything. So what you can, you know, you'll be swiping around on the touch screen, but stuff will get over to the other screen. You'll have to use your mouse and keyboard. It's not the end of the world.
It'd be embarrassing if someone's watching and you try to swipe on the non-touch screen.
Hey, somebody's watching me like 20 hours a week, and I do it all the time in very public. I'm constantly touching my laptop screen. And I think that this is something that everybody does now because if you have a tablet or a touch screen phone, you're used to touching, and you're sitting at your laptop and you touch it, and you go, oh, that wasn't good. You know, this is why it baffles me that Apple did not update their laptops to include touch. Maybe they will, although all the Apple gurus I talk to say, oh, Apple won't do touch for some time. Golly, you know, Apple really made touch universal with the iPad and the iPhone. I don't understand why they wouldn't do it with their operating system.
You'd think they'd follow through, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know, as much as I bash Microsoft for Windows 8, kudos to them for at least bringing touch to it, and it works. It works really well. In fact, that's really the problem with Windows 8 is it's so reliant on touch gestures, like getting the charms. You know, you really have to know you sweep it in from the right-hand side of the screen, and it's just not discoverable because we're not.
Can you do that with the mouse?
Yeah. You click in the lower right-hand corner. Also, and this is really important, there's keystrokes for every one of these. So Windows key C will open the charms bar. Windows key D will open the desktop. You hit Windows key, it goes to the start screen. All of those things are really good to learn. Really good to learn because they keep your hands on the keyboard.
Cool. Yeah, I touch type and I hate to take my hands off the keyboard and go to a mouse
there
or anything.
There you go. But I do think, I will stand by my recommendation. If you're going to get Windows 8, you should really have at least one touch screen. There's just times you really want to... Really, I find that I use it in a hybrid way. I don't do exclusively touch. I don't do exclusively mouse, exclusively keyboard. I do what kind of feels natural at the time. So there are times when it's just natural, like when you're scrolling a page, like you're looking for something. It's so much easier to scroll it up and down with your finger than it is with a mouse scroll wheel or a button. It's just more natural. Occasionally, I'm looking at a dialogue box and I'll just reach out and hit OK. It just seems more natural somehow to do that. While I got, you know, my hands on the keyboard and my trackpad and all that stuff, sometimes it just feels more natural. So it's nice to have the choice. I guess that's my my attitude. Thanks, Lou. 8888 Ask Leo. I forgot. I'm going to tell you about Stamps.com. Holy camoly. Let's talk about my favorite place to go instead of the post office. Stamps.com. Why buy postage? Why use an expensive postage meter when you've got everything you need right now to print and use stamps to put postage on packages? Stamps.com. Visit Stamps.com. It's a website. You sign up, pay a monthly fee, and then you can print unlimited postage. I went to the wrong site. Let me pull it up for you. International, they fill out the forms for you, express mail, priority mail. And if you've been using a postage meter, I got to tell you, the advantage of Stamps.com is huge. Postage meter ink alone costs, believe it or not, as much as 100 times what your inkjet ink costs. And inkjet ink is already overpriced. It's not good. Don't do it. Go to Stamps.com. You can use your printer. No special ink, no postage meter. You don't have to wait in line at the post office to get it recharged. None of that stuff. Stamps.com. Let me go. Oh, you know, every time I go there, I get the offer. So I can't show you the front page. But the way it works, if you go to Stamps.com, you'll see an $80 bonus value offer. Don't do that. The no-risk trial. Click the microphone. It's in the upper right-hand corner.
and use our offer code TECHGUY, one word, T-E-C-H-G-U-Y. And this is the best way to find out about Stamps.com. Now, look, if you're just doing the Christmas list once a year, this is probably not a good solution for you. But if you're in a business where you mail things, whether it's invoices or flyers, packages, if you're a seller on eBay or Etsy, man, you've got to use Stamps.com. I see when I get packages a lot, I can always tell. I look at the label, and you can always tell it's a Stamps.com. You can have your company logo on it. It'll automatically pull the address from the website, eBay, Amazon, Etsy, PayPal. It'll automatically put your return address in there. You're going to get with this no-risk trial a USB scale, so you always know exactly the right postage. You don't have to worry about the prices. You know, the price is changing. It automatically updates that for you. We asked some people who use Stamps.com to tell us about their experience. Veronica Lucas, I always love hearing these success stories. She has a small business. It's called Poppets Pockets. This is so cool. They make reusable cloth items like cloth diapers. She says, before I used Stamps.com, international mailing was a huge problem for her business. Filling out forms, waiting in line, whenever she had to ship a package to Canada, just a real pain in the behind. So she heard us talking about Stamps.com. She took advantage of the no-risk trial. She says, quote, shipping to Canada is the reason we started using Stamps.com and the reason we continue to use it every time we ship any package. Simplified customs forms combined with at-my-door pickup. That's right. You don't even have to go to the post office for the package. They come and get it. It's awesome. No-risk trial. Visit Stamps.com. Click the microphone. You're going to get a $110 bonus offer, including $55 free postage, a digital scale, an activity kit, and 30 days of Stamps.com. $55 in free postage. Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Tech Guy. And by the way, thank you for Veronica for sharing your story with us. That's cool. Stamps.com. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's our home theater guru. The editorial director at the AVS Forum and the host of our Home Theater Geeks podcast every Monday on the Twit Network. Every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Hi, Scotty.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
So I did it. I can't believe I did it. Did you go to that Samsung event?
No, but I had a correspondent there, and we wrote up a piece about it on avsforum.com. Just go to the homepage and scroll down a few stories, and you'll find it.
So about 2 years ago, you and I were at CES, and a couple of companies were showing OLED screens.
Light-emitting diode, the next technology in flat panels.
And the first time we've seen a new technology since SED, which was never released.
That's
right. It's been, I don't know, 10 years,
maybe more.
Yeah, I guess LED backlighting was the last somewhat of a change.
Somewhat, but not that big
OLED
a change.
OLED is
somewhat
huge.
Of a change. It's
so
huge.
We saw OLEDs from LG. We saw OLEDs from Samsung. We saw OLEDs from, we think, from Sony.
Sony and Panasonic showed prototypes at CES.
Now, the that was 2 years ago. Last year, we saw, they said, oh, we'll have them by the end of the year.
Right.
This year, I guess, in January. And so LG is shipping one, right?
Yep. LG is now shipping one.
For $15,000.
Yes. For a 55-inch television.
So this week, Samsung had an event.
Yep, in New York.
And Dr. Mom in our chat room was a VIP. She went. You had a correspondent there. Dr. Mom was our correspondent. It was a curved OLED, and they kind of smacked around LG because they took, it's a lot less. It's only
$9,000. $6,000 less than the LG. Which is pretty amazing when you think about it. And it's virtually identical in terms of form factor. It's 55-inch TV. It's curved. Both of them are curved. So they have a very slight concave curve. Well, Samsung explained. I asked the same question of Samsung. And they explained it as, well, we need some sort of differentiation.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's not technically necessary. It just, you know, you look at it and you go, oh, that's a Samsung.
Oh, that's, well, or LG. I mean, they're both the same.
Oh, they curved it too, yeah.
They both curved it.
So it's not that differentiated.
Not from the LG, but from other flat panels.
Now, besides being ridiculously expensive, are these that much better?
Well, I hope to find out.
You're going to come up to my house because I ordered one.
Yes, I will absolutely come to your house and do a calibration for you.
Oh, would you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I want to know.
You're going to have to fight Robert Herrenoff. He wants to do this.
Maybe we can Maybe we can coordinate and both do it together, because I really want to. When you do a calibration, you really learn about a TV, right, about what its capabilities are, what its limitations are. And so I would love to do that. And if Robert's going to take a look as well, maybe we can coordinate. I'll ask him about it.
And I'll tell you why I invested a lot of money in it. And it's mm-hmm. for the company, but it's because this is really the first time we've seen something so new. And I think it's really important that we take a look at it. More mm-hmm. than just a cursory look at it to yeah. understand, and if this really is a breakthrough. Also, there remain concerns about longevity on OLED screens.
That's right. That's right. Now, Dr. Mom in the chat room is reminding us, and it's true, that Consumer Reports, in fact, already reviewed it.
They said, quote, "It's arguably the best all-around TV we've ever tested, with the highest overall picture quality scores and no major shortcomings, except perhaps its steep price."
And that is, I'm not surprised that they said that, and others will probably too. Yeah. The black levels, which we talk about as being so important to picture quality, are really, really low. The colors are very vibrant. It's probably very bright. Samsung actually has an interesting feature where if you wear 3D glasses, two people can watch different programs on the same screen.
This one cracks me up. So the glasses are active shuttered glasses. So that's how they do the 3D. They're turning off and on all the time. Very, very rapidly. You can't see that. So that way, basically, the same screen shows two different pictures. If you didn't have glasses, it would look garbled. But with the glasses,
you see both pictures at once. You'd see one overlaid on the other.
But with the glasses, you only see the show you want to see. So you and your spouse can lie in bed, look at this TV, and be watching completely different shows.
Now, you better have separate headphones as well.
No, the sound is built into the glasses.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They're special glasses.
So you do have headphones.
Right. Separate sound. And the reason that the OLED can do this is that the response time of the pixels is so fast. So much faster than, it's not that much faster than LCD, but fast enough that it's really not a problem. And so Samsung decided to make this another feature, differentiating feature probably. I don't know if the LG does it or not.
It's kind of ironic because I live alone, and probably the only people who could buy this are people who don't have wives to stop them. So,
well, the other thing is...
I'm just joking.
The curved screen is a mystery to me, because really it's ideal for one person to sit at the vertex or the apex of that curve.
I know, and that one of the selling points of OLEDs is how wide the viewing angle is. In fact, Dr. Mom took video. You go all the way to the side of it, and it looks just as good as it does.
That's right. That's right. No problem as with LCD.
The curving also means you have to sit kind of within 8 to 10 feet of the screen, or you're going to not get the benefit of it.
That's right. And then there's an issue. If you have a light on, it's a fairly reflective screen, I'm told. And if you have a point source light, like some sort of light bulb or light fixture or something, and it's reflecting in the screen, it can actually smear out and become a line because of the curvature of the screen. And Mark Henninger, my correspondent at this event, my East Coast guy, noted that and took some pictures and showed that it was pretty clearly obvious. I just took a look at Dr. Mom's video as well, and you can see it there too. Even though she took her video, for some reason, they really loved her. They let her in before the mass public demonstration and dimmed the lights and let her choose the better picture mode than the torch mode and everything.
That's nice.
Really nice.
So, it does sound like this is going to be a significant improvement in technology. It's encouraging that even Samsung was selling this TV initially at around $15,000. They dropped it as well. That's encouraging. What it means is, and you see this, we saw it with plasma. The first plasmas were $20,000. That as the technology for making these improves and as more people buy them, the cost of making them drops. And if they're dropping that fast, that much, it's likely these will be more affordable in the $2,000 to $4,000 range in the next couple of years, I would guess.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Now, one thing to keep in mind is that this OLED screen, this OLED TV, is only, quote unquote, 1080p. It's not UHD. It's not the new high resolution.
Now, somebody asked me the other day, should I buy a UHD TV? And I said, why? There's nothing to see on it.
That's correct. There isn't. And the standards aren't finished yet. HDMI 2.0 isn't finished yet.
Well, that's significant.
They're not quite sure what they're going to do in terms of bit depth or what's called chroma subsampling, very technical term for how they compress the color for transmission or storage. So these are issues that aren't yet resolved. So while I do applaud early adopters, because they're the ones that fund the projects for the rest of us, I wouldn't recommend, generally speaking, that people get UHD yet as well. On the other hand, that is the future, and you can get a much bigger UHD TV than these for less money.
Yeah. By the way, another nice thing about this OLED screen is because you're spending so much money, you're getting a quad-core processor, built-in Wi-Fi. They've got a web browser. They've got apps. They're really loading this puppy up. Well, I'm back-ordered. When it comes, we'll talk. Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com, and also twit.tv/HTG. He's our home theater geek. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So that was 9:10, which is exactly what I thought it should be. I'm going to let Scott take over.
Oh, yeah. Scooter X says no wall mounted.
We built the Tech Guy Labs. We chose
I don't care about that.
The curved OLED, that's true. Many people wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, Leo, before you go, for recording, pre-recording my segments for when you're gone.
Yeah, when do you want to do that?
I would love to do that on, you had mentioned Saturdays.
Yeah, it'd be nice to do it right after the show if you want, but we can do it at your convenience.
No, that's totally fine, but we had originally talked about the 14th, but that's Yom Kippur, so the week before, the 7th, would be ideal for
me. September 7th, let me put it in.
Yeah.
That's fine with me, and that's perfect. The nice thing about doing it then is we have an engineer sitting here, so it makes it very easy.
And what I will do is just, answer reader questions. There's tons of them I have.
I'm sure you can come up with something to talk about, too. You don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be this is this week's news.
Right. It can't be, obviously.
Right.
But certainly I can come up with some things to talk about and answer some questions.
Okay, great. So we'll do a pre-tape from 2 to, it'd probably be done at 2:30 or no later than 3 p.m. on
sure. Yeah, on we've got, what, 7th. six segments to do.
Three.
Well,
you
you're right. Three.
Six.
Three. No. You're right.
We'll do three.
I'm only on one day of the weekend.
I'm planning on three. You can do as many as you want.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking, I'll be there for the whole weekend, but no, I won't.
No. All right. I'm going to let you take over.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All righty.
We've been actually talking a lot in the chat room about this OLED, and Dr. Mom, boy, she had super cool, super great access here. For some reason, they must have just liked the way she looked or the way what she said. Aaron B. in the chat room says, heck, I used to sell 42-inch plasma ED TVs for $16K. Yes, and this is the issue. I remember 42-inch plasmas from Fujitsu and a couple other people. For over $10,000, first DVD player was $1,000, first Blu-ray player was $1,000, now you can get them for $100. Leo is exactly right that these things come down, and I wasn't expecting them to come down this fast. I mean, $9,000 is still a lot for a TV, a 55-inch in particular, but, you know, that's $6,000 less. It's not quite half of what LG was charging. TK421 is asking, have they fixed the longevity of the colors? Well, we don't know. We hope so. And the only way to know is going to be to run that TV for a long time. The only problem with that is, you know, you spend that kind of money, you don't want to run it 24/7 just to see how soon the colors will degrade. In particular, the blue, which is always been the bugaboo blue, that would degrade faster than the others. Also, Samsung is using a different technique. They're doing direct RGB, red, green, blue, OLED subpixels, they're called, whereas LG is doing some sort of white and then putting it through filters. And they claim that this solves the blue longevity problem in particular, because they're not using blue OLEDs. They're using white OLEDs and sending them through filters. like LCD TVs. So I'm not quite sure whether the white OLED has a better lifespan or whatever. But that's as far as I understand it. Now, I don't understand it completely. I don't haven't actually had one in. We should get one. Tom Norton, my buddy over at HomeTheater.com, is expecting to get one, an LG, in the next couple weeks. And so I hope to take a look at that and have a better sense of really what's going on. Thank you, Mick. How nice of you to say. I appreciate that. So Cal Ray Jr., yeah, I would love to get my hands on one of those for calibration and testing. Well, as I said, Tom will have one in the next couple weeks, so contact him, and you should be able to check that out. As soon as Leo gets his, you know I'm on the next plane to Northern California, because I'm definitely going to want to check that out. Rusty Bones paid $949 for his first top-loading VCR. Yeah, I paid probably over $1,200 or so for my first VCR, which was a Panasonic, and it was a kind of a portable docking thing. It was very cool. Sounds like here we go.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Live read Carbonite. You're on.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. We talk high tech each weekend at this time with you, the viewer. I'm sorry, listener. I'm confused. Deborah in is it Mojave? The Mojave, the desert? Are you in the desert?
Yes, I am in the desert.
Wow, it's 97 degrees here in Northern California. I can only imagine what it's like in Mojave.
Oh, it'd take me a few paces to go look at the temperature, but it's bad.
My car broke down in the Mojave once. I had to hitchhike back to Bakersfield. No fun.
You might remember, that's not fun.
No fun.
Leo, I'm a big fan, but I have a huge problem with my netbook. I have a Toshiba NB505, and I adore it. I'm not online very much, and about 3 weeks ago, I was at a Wi-Fi spot, and the machine just locked up. So it took me about 2 hours to get through safe mode and into administration and all of this stuff to get it to come back up to the Windows start screen. And at the bottom, I got a message that said device driver installed successfully, which, of course, I wasn't doing. I was just out in the world.
Right.
And the message that I found was Intel N10 ICH7 Family PCI Express root port 27D6.
That's fine. That's normal. So let me say a couple of things.
All right.
When did you buy that?
February 2011.
2 years and 6 months.
Yes, sir.
And you paid $250 for it.
$280. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've gotten some good mileage out of that.
Yes, sir.
$10 a month.
I have indeed. I love it. Yeah.
I got to tell you, the netbooks were very cheap. And the reason they were very cheap is because they were made with very cheap stuff. And they're nice. They're small. But they've really stopped selling netbooks because, in fact, you got more out of your netbook than most people. Most of the time, they fail sooner or later. Now, I don't know what the crash is. The driver is not a big deal. It probably found a better or more up-to-date motherboard driver. That happens all the time. That doesn't mean somebody hacked your computer. I presume that's what you're worried about.
Well, yeah, the root port thing kind of bothered me.
That scared
me.
You? No.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunately, the word root is also used in other contexts, and in this case, it's completely normal.
Okay.
Unfortunately, you know, these netbooks are not going to be super reliable. To get 2.5 years out of it is excellent.
Okay, so the point of it is time to move on.
Maybe, if you can't get, is it not working at all now, or is it just?
Oh, no, I have it back working, but it does tend to freeze up. And,
I'd run it into the ground. And then when you really, it's just too much trouble to keep it. It's like a car, you know? That netbook has 193,000 miles on it.
Yep.
In car terms, it is wearing out, and that's to be expected for $250. That's a great price. You got a lot of mileage out of that. And you're going to have be hard-pressed to find an equivalently priced computer when you go back to the store, because netbooks really were a category that flopped. Not because the people didn't love the price. They did. They sold a lot of them, but then they found that it wasn't reliable.
Right.
So, you know, but usually it's things like the trackpad. I'm sure you've noticed your mouse clicker seems to be wearing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that's moving in it, that one has a hard drive, which is kind of nice, right? You have a mm-hmm. hard drive in there, so you have a lot of storage. That's unusual for a netbook.
Right. Yeah. One of the reasons I got it. Yeah.
It's fine. What's going to happen is it's going to get less and less reliable, and at some point you're going to just want to get a new notebook.
Right. Back it up and start shopping.
But nothing to what you saw with that driver update, that's completely normal.
Okay.
Yeah, Toshiba probably pushed out an update, and Windows Update caught it, downloaded it. It happened when it crashed. That's in effect a reboot. Those drivers they can't be installed until you reboot. So that was probably the first reboot since it had updated itself, and it said, "Okay, I'm going to install this now."
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you. It was great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Nothing to fear, Deborah. Thank you. I really am glad you're listening.
Take care. Listen as much as I can.
Oh, that's fabulous. Listening on KFI in Los Angeles?
Yes, sir. KFI Los Angeles.
That is a powerhouse station. 50,000 watts all over Southern California. I'm so glad to have you. Thank you. Our mothership, actually.
Take care.
That's where we started. This show started 1,005 episodes ago. And then it spread. It just spread. Rob in Rollo, Montana. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I love your show, by the way. It's been very helpful to me.
Thank you.
I have a Netgear R600 router, and it just keeps dropping the signal.
Yeah. And you're pretty sure it's the router, not your provider?
Yes, because I had a friend of mine who works for the provider come in, and he said I'm getting all sorts of good signal, but he thought it was the router. So
it's sometimes hard to tell because, you know, if your internet provider goes down, it's going to look just like the router's gone down. It is not unusual. If you think about it, these routers are really cheap computers with firmware. They're running, specialized operating systems, specialized software. And because they're so cheap and because they don't have fans, they're on all the time. They can get quite hot. It's not unusual for them to be unreliable.
Yeah.
There is no really good fix. What I would suggest before you do anything is download the latest firmware.
That we did.
Okay. And if it's still doing that, there's a couple of choices. There are third-party router firmware out there that are quite good, like Tomato and DDWRT. I don't know if it'll work on yours. You'll have to check the databases and see what routers it works on. So there's two to look for, DD-WRT. And Tomato, just like the fruit.
All right.
So if you go to dd-wrt.com, you can look at the router database, see if yours is supported. If it is, often that will fix it.
Okay. And if that doesn't do it...
throw it out and buy a new one.
What would you suggest? Yes, obviously. What would you suggest? I'm trying not to spend a whole lot of money. I'm disabled, so I don't have much of an income stream. So I'm wondering, what should I do for around $100-$125?
Oh, that's a lot of money. A Wi-Fi router is not expensive.
Okay.
Well under $100. I like, I tell you, my favorite's D-Link. Netgear's good. I stay away from Linksys because they're really cheap consumer grade.
Mm-hmm.
But in your price range, you could get an Apple if you wanted to. You can get, which are expensive, but I think have very good software.
For $100, I can get an Apple?
Like 120. I would get a dual-band D-Link. I think you're going to be happiest. Just get an up-to-date one.
I will do that.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to talk about Ring Central a little bit. Have I talked recently about Ring Central? That's our phone system here at the Brick House. I did not want to buy a big PBX system. I didn't want to have all the complexity and the hardware in the basement. So... when we built our new studios, we asked our IT guy, and he said, I've installed Ring Central for a lot of people. It's easy to set up. It's easy to use, easy to manage. He recommended it. And since he was the guy who was going to probably have to be managing it, I said, all right, let's do it. And here we are. More than 2 years later, we're so happy with Ring Central. Ring Central is a cloud-based PBX. Zero startup costs. You don't have any hardware to install or maintain. It does it all in the cloud. Lots of great features because it's digital. For instance, if Heather needs to make a call using our business line, she can use the Ring Central app on her smartphone, iPhone or Android, and make the call. Texting, too, comes to our 800 number, incoming and outgoing. Now they've got a new feature. If you're in sales, you're going to love this. Ring Central for Salesforce.com. You can integrate all your phone calls into your CRM seamlessly. While you're in the call, create new records for contacts and leads. Create real-time call notes. It really makes your CRM more productive. Very easy to use. It's just one of many reasons. See, when you go digital like this, when you go cloud like this, it's just endless. They can add features all the time, and they do. So we've got a really good deal. Zero startup costs. RingCentral is about $20 per month per user. You could try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. That's awesome. Call 800-543-9980. That's our special RingCentral number just for Tech Guy listeners. 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT for 30 days free. We have been so happy with it. RingCentral.com. Oh, BlackBerry, too. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, televisions, and everything in between. Gadgets, digital photography, of course, cell phones. We always talk a lot about cell phones these days. I think we got to find a new name for these smartphones. They're not phones as much as they are pocket computers. That doesn't sound very interesting, the pocket computer.
Kind of lame.
Yeah.
I went with handheld, but that's ancient as well, or it refers to something.
Well,
ancient.
Yeah, that's, you know what? This is a, we've got a very smart, literate group here. Heather Hammon, of course, but also all of you in the chat room, all of you listening. We can't really call, I think smartphones does them an injustice. And it was right in the early days when it was more a phone than anything else. But I don't know. Do you make a lot of phone calls? I make very few.
No.
It's more like an emergency thing. Than anything else, right? I'll text people before I do that.
Mm-hmm.
Mobile. Yeah. Mobile is what they call it in every other part of the world. Not cell phone, but mobile. Mobile phone.
That's right.
What if they just call it mobile? That's my mobile. I don't like the word mobile. Just because I don't like
going mobile.
Mobile. Mobile. Oh, mobile. Mobile. No, that sounds terrible. Handy phone.
Cellular. I'm trying to blend words.
I like it. Wait a minute. Horrible. I'm gonna call it a celluluter.
Like Brangelina, but
it's a celluluter. It's
a cellular computer.
My celluluter.
I have a friend who got a new laptop and she keeps calling it the wireless.
The wireless.
I don't even know what that means.
Huh? Wireless.
I hope you don't go into the Apple store and say that.
I'm looking for a new 27-inch wireless.
Hello, Mavis?
Wireless.
The whole thing.
It's like you're going to get Amos and Andy on there
exactly.
And the Lone Ranger. And now, the wireless. I don't know. I realized that I hardly ever make phone calls. Maybe a few times a week make phone calls. But I use my smartphone, and I see everybody else using it to type all the time, right? That's another thing. It's the new position. I saw a picture of models, beautiful women, beautiful gowns, and they were all staring at their phone and holding it. And there's a certain thing, you know, when somebody's typing on their, and it's just this look. You're looking down and you're holding it with kind of like cradling it like it's a little piece of miracle of modern technology, and you're cradling it and your thumbs are, and that's just the new look.
We're all going to have crooked necks or something, right?
Oh, there's something wrong.
It's like the heroin droop. Is that what that's called?
Yeah, sure. That's it. I've got the celluluter droop.
Yeah.
It just and everybody's doing this, and they're not holding it to their head. You do see people, you know, walking down the street holding it to their head, but mostly I see people typing on it. We need a new name for this.
Huey Lewis, help us out.
I want a new name. All right, Heather, let's get back to the phone. Who should I talk to here?
Ron in Brea.
Ron in Brea, next on the Tech Guy Show. Hi, Ron.
Thank God I finally got you.
Thank God! Help is on the way.
Help is on the way. I'm a little bummed out and maybe a little disappointed at the same time. I saved for MacBook Pro. I have a 13-inch created in 2012 as a processor 2.9 gigahertz. The memory is 8 gigabyte. And not enough about Macs to be dangerous. But anyway, long story short, I've had this thing for about 5 months, worked perfectly. All of a sudden, I was getting error messages.
Ugh.
And then it crashed on me. I said, what the heck is this? I've got a little wheel that's going round and round. So I took it back to the Apple store. And the guy says, well, Ron, I think, you know, it's all right. I said, but if I were you, let's do a little bit of a diagnostic. And then he took it in and says, no, what I would probably do is go ahead and reformat it.
Hey.
Now,
I'll tell you why. Because they can't tell if it's hardware or software. You know, and this is, you're going to get this from everybody. If you bring it to Dell or any repair shop, the first thing they're going to do is, look, I'm going to format the drive and put it back the way it was.
Well, let me just say one thing before we get into that. And that is, I had Windows 8 also partitioned in here in boot camp.
Okay.
And they said, well, maybe by chance when you install that, something was a glitch that kind of happened in there. I don't know.
It could be, you just don't know, because there's so many things that can go wrong with a monitor.
I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, I let them do it based on my good buddy, the computer Apple geek buddy of mine that I've got. He said, yeah, go ahead. He says, that can't. Go ahead and do it after all this contemplation.
Back up your data, but go ahead and do it.
I backed up the data. Okay. They went ahead and did it yesterday and then gave it back to me.
Yeah.
I got it back, and lo and behold, I said, everything's back in there. But now my picture files are all kind of cattywampus.
Well, what do you mean your picture files?
Well, in iPhoto, I have...
So you backed that up, right? Because it was all erased. Yeah.
I backed it up.
So you have a bad backup.
Well, I didn't get Windows 8, and I expected that. I'd have to reinstall that and install that.
Who did your backup?
Apple. Who did my backup? Apple did my backup.
So they said, we're going to back it up before we wipe it?
Yeah, I was there with them, you know, in the store, in the Apple store in Santa Barbara, and they went ahead and did it, and they backed it up in a time capsule, and everything's backed up. And then they took it in for a couple of hours, and I went picked it up, and then...
Yeah, the time capsule won't back up Windows. It only backs up the Mac partition. He should have told you that.
Right, well, they did tell me that, and I said, like, okay, I guess we'll have to go ahead and do that. Then I can always put Windows back in. And so I brought it back home thinking, okay, fine, I'm going to continue with the backup, reinstall my files. And I see iPhoto, all my albums, are Helter Skelter. They're not even in order. And I go, I had music with the albums. I had everything organized. And now it's not the way it is. So I took it back to the Apple store, and the guy said, I don't know. He says, Ross, he fiddles around with it, puts something back in there. But everything is not back the way it should be. And I realize that these guys are not, you know, all-knowing.
They may call them geniuses, but they're just like you and me. They're doing the best they can.
Exactly. So now I'm bummed out about that. And what my question is...
Well, it's a bad backup. You should have a backup, though. Do you not have your own backup?
I have my own backup, yes.
Where's your backup?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I brought the little time. It's my passport I purchased, and I brought it over there. And
it was your backup.
It was my backup.
Okay,
yeah, so I backed it up. They backed it. They started the backup, and I watched it being backed up. It was backed up, and it was
You can go. You know, you can go with a time machine. You can go back to a previous version of iPhoto. I'm not sure if this is not Apple's fault. This is the backup that you made.
The backup I made, possibly. But, you know, they never really actually give you that much time unless you really pay for
it. Well, their job is not to bake your backup. Really, all they're ever required to do, and the only reasonable thing they should do is say, good, well, let's tell you what, we want to see if the computer is software or hardware fault, so we're going to wipe your drive. I hope you have a good backup. And it's not. They were actually helping you because they said, "Well, let's make sure it's backed up." They don't. I've never heard anybody doing that, really, to be honest with you. Their job is that takes so much time. What their job is to wipe the drive, put the thing on. That takes 10 minutes, and then see if you have the same problem. By the way, do you have the same problem? Did that fix the wheel of death?
That fixed up that problem, but I still get a little bit of a wheel thing going on when I first start the machine up. I'm wondering why I get that little.
Well, how long? How long does it go for?
For about 2 seconds, and then stops.
Okay, that's fine. That means it's busy. It's busy booting up. That's fine.
Busy booting up.
Yeah.
Now, if I go ahead and reinstall my boot camp for Windows 8 in here, am I going to have more of a problem? I don't know. I don't think I should have a problem. But and I brought a lot of files over from my PC. I was a PC guy, and I converted to being an Apple guy. So I hope that's not what
Who knows? Was. Who knows? I have Windows running on almost all my Macs without problem. I don't think that's the problem. When, you know, they were right. They said, well, we can't tell if it's hardware. Certainly, it's within warranty. We'll fix it. But let's first see if it is hardware. Maybe it's just something you installed or something that went wrong. And apparently, when they wiped it and reinstalled, everything's fine. So it was something going on with, you know, and that can happen. That's how, you know, computers are. So that's the good news. Your hardware's fine. You got to look to your own backup. Look to your own house and see why things are out of order. They shouldn't be out of order. I certainly don't want to have you continue to use the Time Machine, but I don't use Time Machine. And I don't want to have you keep using it if it's going to keep doing that. So maybe you want a secondary backup, just to be sure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think that
this time of year, it seems
a long
like
phone call with AppleCare is not the solution either. I don't think there is a problem exactly. I'm not sure what the problem is, really. This is why I'm glad I don't, you know, work in support, because. But you need a good backup. And I don't like Time Machine because I don't know what's going on with Time Machine. I don't like backups where I don't know what's going on. So what I do, and, you know, the truth is I don't have to worry about backup as much because of cloud. So everything's in the cloud, and I have it on. I have Macs at work and Macs at home, and it's all the same data everywhere. It's like there's so many copies of everything, I don't have to ever worry about backup. However, if you have one machine and you have one backup, then you need a better backup solution. I reinstall all the time because I always have new computers. Sometimes I wipe my computer. I do that with my phones too. I put a new ROM on this HTC One almost every other day, it seems like. So that's actually a good exercise. If you're always installing, reinstalling, then you'll know if your backups are good, won't they? Won't you? I would recommend Super Duper for the Mac. Super Duper is a much better backup solution. Works well with Time Machine. It'll make a bootable backup of your system. In fact, I wonder if it would have gotten the Windows partition. I don't know. I don't know if Super Duper will get non-Mac partitions. Probably won't. I forgot to stop my timer. R-Sync is excellent, and I use a version of R-Sync, a front-end R-Sync called ChronoSync on the Mac that is excellent. So Super Duper is great if you're using Time Machine. ChronoSync is what I use. And I use ChronoSync. For instance, we were talking yesterday about the dual hard drives with your photos. So that second hard drive, I ChronoSync the first hard drive, the second hard drive, so that they're always in sync. And that's basically a front-end R-Sync. And runs like R-Sync. On Sket, you know, using cron and stuff like that. A single solution for OS X and Boot Camp is not available. All right. So you have to back up your Windows. Carbon Copy Cloner can back up the Boot Camp partition, but can't make a bootable clone. Well, that's all right. We don't care about that. So this is... Oh, it only does one volume at a time. So this is the same issue, which is it will back up your Windows partition, but it's a separate volume. So this is an oldie but goodie, the Carbon Copy Cloner. Problem is it's OS X, right? So he needs what I was hoping is there'd be a solution that does both the OS X partition and the Windows partition, but apparently there's not. The Active Notifications app for Android on your S4. I'm sure I have turned it on. I don't remember what it did. Yeah, Yeah, Linux Lurker, but that's because you're a hardcore Linux guy. Well, I'm relieved that Consumer Reports liked that TV. That's a huge relief. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. So I've been looking around. I don't see any single solution for Macintoshes that will do both. If you're running Windows on your Mac in a boot camp partition, that will do both. You have to do separate clones of your OS X and your Windows partitions. That's just the only thing you can do. There's great Windows backup tools. That's what you use on your boot camp partition. But it's a separate thing. And a Time machine will not even see the Windows partition. So there's no point in trying to back up with Time Machine if you want to get the Windows stuff. You have to do the Windows stuff separately. Just checking to make sure. Roger, Whittier, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How's it going?
Great. How are you, Roger?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well, except I've got an error message that's been chasing me for months, and it's from Dolby, and nobody there seems to really want to lay claim to it. And except for a couple of people that I've managed to get a little information out of, and then they just fade into the background.
Where are you seeing the error message?
It occurs at boot up, and what it says
boot up
is,
on what, a PC?
PC, yes, desktop.
And what's your sound card on that desktop?
It's a standard card on the motherboard, which is DZ77BH-55.
That's what's giving you the error message. That's where the Dolby error message is coming from, not Dolby. Oh,
I understand that, but on the other hand, it's Dolby who put the stuff together. Dolby Home Theater.
No, Dolby's not going to help you. Because what they do is they license it to the manufacturer of the motherboard of the sound card, and that's who's responsible for it.
Okay, well, maybe we can go on and maybe somebody knows an answer, because I just need to get the right driver, and I can't lay hands on it.
Yeah, so it's a motherboard sound card. Is this a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
Do you have a separate sound card?
No.
No. So it's the motherboard sound card. So here's who's responsible for it, the manufacturer of the motherboard. Who made your computer?
And well, it's a special build, but it's an Intel.
It's a special build by?
A local shop.
Local shop.
I did some of it. They did some of it.
Okay. So, and who'd you buy the motherboard from?
From the local shop. They bought the parts. And
so you have to ask them, whose motherboard is this? Is it a Gigabyte? Is it a Asus?
No, I know what it is. It's an Intel DZ77BH-55K.
Okay. So you need to go to the Intel site and download the drivers for the motherboard.
And how would I tell which is the actual driver for the Dolby?
Well, you get them because, no, it has not. Forget Dolby. Erase that from your mind.
Okay.
It's the sound card that's giving you the error message. It's an unhelpful error message. You need to get an updated driver for the sound card. Because it's motherboard sound, it won't be separate in most cases. It will come with the motherboard drivers. So go to Intel. This is what happens when you build your own computer. Guess what? Guess who's in charge of support?
Me.
This is why I don't recommend it. So now you got to go to Intel, and you have to find the drivers for that DZ motherboard.
Okay, so get those drivers
updated,
for the motherboard.
Updated drivers, because that's what's breaking.
Okay, very good.
And no point in talking to Dolby, because they licensed this to the chip manufacturer, probably Intel. Dolby's not going to solve it for you. They probably don't. That error message isn't even coming from them. It's coming from Intel. So you need to get the drivers from Intel.
Okay, I will get the motherboard drivers and update those.
You got it. That's the solution. Hello, Brad, San Clemente, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
This is amazing. Yeah, I'm deep in Orange County, San Clemente.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I wanted to get your opinion. I kind of came up with a solution last night, playing around as I stay up till 3 o'clock. And I'm geeking out and trying to figure out how all these things work. And I wanted to be able to transfer from my phone when I take a picture and have it show up on my computer. Real simple.
Yeah.
And what I did is I loaded Picasa. I love Google programs. And it monitors all the files and folders on our computers, right?
It doesn't monitor them, but the first time you load it, it goes out and checks them. I don't think it sits and watches.
Well, no, you can actually do that. You can check it and have it.
Oh, you say, what? Well, you wouldn't want to watch all folders, but you could say, yeah, watch this download folder for pictures, yeah.
Correct, like yeah. Certain folders.
Right.
So what I did, in short, I'll shorten this up, is I had it monitor my Google Drive folder. And then what I do is I upload or I share when I take a picture. I hit sharing on my phone. I have an Android phone.
Great.
And I say, share this.
Good.
And it goes into my Google Drive.
Yep.
And then Picasa is looking at that folder.
Great
Boom,
solution.
It's on my computer.
Great solution.
Okay, so I wanted to get your opinion on, is there other programs?
Oh, there's lots of ways to skin this cat, yeah. So since you have an Android phone, you have numerous choices for automated backup to the cloud. Dropbox, for instance, will automatically upload all the pictures. You could do exactly what you're doing with Google Drive with Dropbox. So you'd have the Dropbox sync to your desktop. You could have Picasa watch the Dropbox and incorporate the photo. So that's second way to do it.
Well, short and simple tech call here. So, yeah, so I could use Dropbox. What do you think is a more efficient way of doing it?
Whichever one that works for you.
Okay.
If you have enough storage on Google Drive to do that, I would do that.
Okay.
You can also...
I know you're a picture aficionado. I mean, I know you have nice cameras and all that stuff.
I use, a couple of different solutions. Facebook and Google Plus also will automatically suck all your photos up and store them. And so I like to have a couple of different copies. I also use paid photo service. A lot of pros use called Smug Mug.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that before, and you like that, huh?
I love it. And the Smug Mug app... on Android will automatically upload every picture you take. It'll upload the full quality image, save it on your Smug Mug.
Gotcha.
And I like that because I kind of use Smug Mug to back up my most important photos.
Well, and those are pretty big files, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, compared to my phone, even though I upgraded the picture quality to maximum and everything, and it only takes about, 20 seconds or so to upload them, so it's not too bad.
No, yeah. Camera phone images aren't gigantic. They can't be.
Right. They're like a meg. It's like just under a meg.
They're JPEGs, and depending on the phone, they're squozed fairly heavily. If you have a Lumia 1020 with a 41 megapixel, then they're 10 megabytes an image. That's
going to be amazing for a phone, right?
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous, yeah.
Because I'm talking on an antique. I've got an old Evo right now.
You'll be upgrading, and this is a great time to be an Android user. I'll tell you, the new Android phones, we've got a Note 3 coming out September 4th. The Moto X will be out on all the carriers end of this month. The HTC One comes out on Verizon. That's I think, the most beautiful phone.
I think that's the way I'm going to go. I mean, I'm on the fence, but I think because I've been an HTC fan since I was, back in the day. And I don't know. I think they were the innovators. Even before the iPhone.
I agree. In fact, the first Android phone was an HTC G1.
Yes, sir. I think they were the touch interface. A lot of people think it's like, the iPhone was the innovator. Well, there was a lot of technologies before that they absorbed.
It's in my museum behind me right now. I would look at the Moto X. I think a lot of people have deprecated the Moto X because they say, it's, mid-range features for a full-price phone. But I'm very impressed with that phone. Not a good camera, though. If cameras are what you're looking for, I think HTC One is or the Galaxy S4. HTC One for low light, Galaxy S4 for daylight.
Right, but I agree with you. If the Android experience is more vanilla and it's lighter, there's not so much going on in the background, and you don't need
it's
all
cleaner.
That.
I agree. Hey, thanks for the call. Leo Laporte. More calls to come right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett, travel author, website monger, tweeterer, and a man who has a frequent flyer card with every airline, platinum gold executive. Hello, Johnny. How are you? Wait a minute. Okay. I'm looking. We know you're somewhere that an undisclosed location.
Not that difficult.
What do you mean? All I see is a ceiling and a chandelier.
But you see it often.
I see it often. Are you home? Are you in Toronto? Where are you?
I'm in Toronto.
Toronto. It is I recognize the Canadian light bulbs.
Well, I turned it off so you can see my head a little bit bigger.
Hi, Johnny. Good to see you. JohnnyJett.com is his website. At JohnnyJett on Twitter. We just love him. What's up?
So the last time I talked to you, I was in San Diego attending the ETA conference. Actually, I was in L.A. last week. But I went to the GPTA, which is a big conference and walking the floor, I told you I found a really cool app. And you ready for it?
I'm ready.
Triplingo.com, I guess. But you can download it. It's for the iPhone or iPad.
Triplingo. Easily speak like a native. So this is a translation tool.
It is. Is my connection okay? Because it sounds a little...
It's a little wonky. It's a little wonky. You know what? Turn off the video. Maybe it will work better if you just stop your
video.
All
right. I'll turn the video.
This is a radio show. Nobody cares what you look like.
All right. So can you hear it now?
Yeah.
Is it a little better?
Triplingo. I'm looking at it. It is triplingo.com, and it's for iOS. So now, I already have Google Translator. Is this like that?
Well, what I like about this, first of all, it's free. They have a free version.
Okay.
And so whatever you are, I'm trying to get ready for your trip, you know, next month. You're going to Turkey.
I got bad news. You're not coming with me, Johnny. Don't even ask. Trying to get ready for my trip. Yeah, no, you're trying to get me ready.
I'm trying to get you ready.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to be in the neighborhood, but I'm not.
Are you? Where are you going to be?
I can't tell you, but I'll be nearby, but not that close.
If I'm walking through Piazza San Marco and I suddenly see Johnny Jett, I'm just going to flip my lid. All right.
I won't be in Italy, okay. But I'll be in Italy.
So
somewhere.
I've used this Google Translate, which is pretty cool. You enter, you can speak to it, enter text, and it will translate it. And then if you ask it to, it will speak the text. Is that what this does?
That's exactly what this does. So you say the phrase, whatever you want in the language, and it will say it right back. But you can do it in four different ways, which Google Translate doesn't do. You can do it formal.
Oh.
Casual,
yeah,
like a local, and they have a style called crazy, which I'm still not sure.
Why would I want to use crazy?
Maybe you're in a bar fight.
So the most frequent one I say is, "Can you direct me to a bathroom, a restroom?" And you could do it formal. Excuse me, sir. Could you direct me to a restroom?
Where you're going, you're not going to need this. And most people who are traveling, you know. I've never had a problem getting by. I barely speak English, first of all, and right. I don't speak any other language, so I have never had a problem. So, but in case you are in some remote area or this really...
I guess there are languages. How many languages does it do? Because that's one of the issues with Google Translate. It doesn't do
every... The
free version
does Spanish, French, Italian, German, Portuguese, Mandarin, Japanese, Korean, Hindi, Hebrew, and Catalan.
That's Barcelona.
Yep.
Well, okay, Google Translate beats it there. I mean, it does more languages for free.
All right. I haven't used the Google Translate, actually.
You know, we should have a little conversation. You use Triplingo and ask me a question, and then I'll record
on my phone.
Oh, yeah.
I have a Windows phone.
Yeah, I have an Android phone, so this is for iOS. All right, I'm going to do this. Tomorrow on the show, I'm going to bring my iPhone in. I'll put Triplingo on my iPhone, and I'll have a conversation between my Android phone and my iPhone. I'll see how long it goes. It's going to be like a game of telephone, back and forth, see how long it goes before it just completely falls apart.
But one thing about this app is it was named the best travel innovation of the year by Fast Company, which...
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
I will try. Talk like a loco, a local. I like the fact that it's got a variety of styles. They call it the slang slider.
Right.
Multiple ways to say each phrase. I mean,
you gotta try that.
That's not critical because mostly you're just trying to get the information across, right?
Exactly. I mean, the only time I've really needed it was in a taxi in China when the guy dropped me off at the wrong station and I needed to get to the airport ASAP. Ooh. And my hand signals weren't doing the trick the first 2 minutes, which felt like an eternity.
Now, I noticed this also will learn what phrases you're interested in and help you learn better, too. So this is a way of learning a language as much as...
Exactly. It has flashcards.
Yeah.
I think that one you have to pay the $4.99.
That's worth it. You can earn badges. And it's got a 2,000-word dictionary. This is pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
And the next thing I want to talk about, if we have time.
We do.
So the U.S. government has come out with this STEP program. It's called Smart Traveler Enrollment Program.
Okay.
So, and what you do is that you sign up. So let's say you're going to Greece or wherever you're going.
Yep.
In Italy. You can go in there. It takes a little bit of time to sign up. You got to put your personal information in. But the thing is about this is when, you know what hits the fan?
Yeah.
They will know where you are. So let's say you're in a country that is being...
Oh, so I should do this before I leave.
There's a terrorist attack or whatever. Right. They know where you are, how to find you. And they also send you emails of all kinds of information before you leave, you know, what you need to look out for.
This is great. I'm going to sign up right now. It's free.
It's free. You know, you have to give your personal information. I just did a couple trips that I'm doing in the next month or so, and it already started emailing me, you know, any kind of warnings.
This is good. So this used to be the registration with embassies program. So you would register with the embassy you're going to.
They just changed the name, I think, to make it a little more appealing.
This seems like a good idea.
But one of my buddies, who's a big traveler and travel expert, he says when the blank hits the wall, the fan, you don't want to run to the American embassy because they're going to be on lockdown. You're going to want to go to the Canadian embassy or the Australian.
Or Ecuador. Yeah, that's a good point.
This has never happened to me, but luckily I've never had to do it. But if I did, that's something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't think there's going to be problems in Italy.
You're not going to have any problems.
Greece has economic issues. Who knows?
Still not going to have a problem.
I probably won't.
You're not. But this is like if you're going to Egypt.
Yeah. I've been in Cairo. And I tell you, when I was in Cairo, it was nerve-wracking. In fact, when you are a tourist in Egypt, well, they probably don't. I wouldn't recommend it now. But when this was a few years ago, we were tourists. You go with a program, of course. You don't want to go on your own. And they take you around. But you have an armed guard at all times. Because they really want to protect tourists, and there have been cases of tourists getting attacked. So,
Egypt's crushed right now in tourism.
I'm not sure I'd really want to go there now.
You don't want to go there right now.
Boy, it was worth it though, and I hope that it settles down. I have to tell you, when I was there, I really thought there is trouble coming because the population was growing so rapidly. They were adding 1 million people to the Cairo population every several months.
Oh.
And I thought, you can't do that infinitely. At some points, it's going to break down. So I knew even in 2009 when we were there, the trouble was on the horizon. The problem with Egypt is it's a small country in effect because it's only populated along the Nile, the Delta. So there's Alexandria up the Nile. There's Cairo up the Nile farther. There's other cities, but there's nothing in the desert. And so everybody ends up in Cairo. And the population,
worst traffic around.
Yeah, the population pressure is intense.
For sure.
Yeah.
So the other big news this week, I mean, there was a couple of big news stories. One is that American Airlines and U.S. Airways, you know, the Department of Justice has blocked it, which is shocking.
Why? You know, there have been a number of airline mergers in the last few years. I don't understand why that one is being blocked, but we'll have to discuss that another time. JohnnyJet.com. That's the place to go. Johnny, enjoy your trip to Canada. We'll talk next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That was 9:10. Just as I thought. Ba, 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 ba. Thanks, Johnny.
If you're running a small business.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Yeah. See, once we turn the video off, it's fine.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. Doing video and audio stuff. So that's good for future reference. When you're somewhere where you know the bandwidth is limited, we'll just not use video at all.
Usually it's strong here, but. Something's acting funny.
Yeah. The internet's been bad lately, all over the place. All right,
Maybe
John.
That's it. Thanks. All right, take care. Have a good week.
Well, we got to set up a time. Just keep it in mind to record segments.
Ready to go.
So I'd like to do three. Yep. The easiest for us would be after the radio show some Saturday, if you're around.
Okay.
Is that good for you? Or
yeah, like how soon?
Anytime. Let's see. This is we could do it. The only time I don't have, because Scott's going to do it, is on September 10th. I'm looking at August. September 7th. So I could do it the 14th. I could do it August 31st.
Okay. I got to look at my schedule.
Yeah, or we don't have to do it.
I'm not planning on going to California for a couple weeks.
We could do it really any day. It's just if I'm sitting here to doing the radio show, then we do it right after the show. We've got an engineer. Okay. It's very straightforward. But seriously, just give us you need to do three of them, so it's like half an hour of recording less. If you just send me an email when it would be good for you, we'll work it out.
Okay.
Okay?
You don't check your emails, though.
I always check my emails. I just don't check it during the radio show.
Oh, okay.
You always send me emails like 5 minutes before you're on. I don't read that. I'm busy. I'm doing a show here.
I gotcha.
I'm doing a all right. show here. All right. So, yeah, I do check my. I read my email religiously, believe it or not. Nobody believes that. All right. I will look for your email. And then if you CC Lisa, then it's for sure.
Okay. All right. I will do it.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Chief Twit.
What about Chief Twit?
Brad from San Clemente called, yes, sort of dripping with apology and thanking you and me. And
why? What happened?
I don't know. Honest to God,
Brad. We love you. There's no problem. Was he a caller?
Yeah, he was on 2 calls ago.
Oh, I didn't see. This is what happens: is people sometimes think I'm, because I hung up, that I'm mad at them. No, I'm just moving along or something. Oh. Anyway, I'm sorry, Brad.
He said, oh, you know, it's like talking to old friends, and I'm sorry if I went on and on.
Oh,
and
no,
something,
no,
something,
no.
something. And then somebody in the chat room was like, oh, plug-a-rama. And I'm like,
No, first of all, ignore the chat room at all times.
I know. I'm about to turn it off. I mean,
Brad, it's okay. Guy.
Yeah. Sitting there judging everyone. It's like, God, they've had a computer problem and decided to call a show. They're a fan. They have every
right.
Me,
please. Don't judge me.
Anyway, Zephyr, exactly.
I don't ignore the chat room. I'm soaking in it.
It was so awesome yesterday, and then today it's like, ouch. I cannot look at the screen.
And it's well, this is the point, is there's anywhere between 700 to 1,000 people in there. And all but two people are fine, and then there's two really annoying people. And you can't brand the I do, and I know we all kind of act as if, well, the whole chat room's bad. I don't mean that. I mean ignore those two people. I don't ignore anybody else. Most of you guys are great. But there are people in the, you know, that's where if you're a you know, troll, that's the first place to go, right?
Oh, true that.
All right.
Live read for Carbonite.
Don't worry, be happy.
Here's a little song I wrote.
Every time I hear this song, the great Bobby McFerrin, I remember taking my son when he was about 6 or 7 to see this, to see Bobby McFerrin sing. And he does a lot of mouth noises and stuff. And halfway into the concert, Henry's looking. He's very quiet. He's looking. He turns to me and says, is this guy crazy? He's
singing. Yeah, a little bit, but in a good way.
A little. We love Bobby McFerrin. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. We've got a website, techguylabs.com. If you go there, you'll find answers to your questions. You don't have to write anything down as you're listening to the show. I know you're driving around. You're doing stuff. That's fine. We'll make a note of it, and we'll save it for you, techguylabs.com. This is episode, 1005? Is that right? So you can go there and look, or by show number, or by topic. We've got a pretty good search engine in there. I say pretty good because it's not perfect, but we're working on it. It's this thing called Google. Someday, these guys are going to get straight, and when they do, watch out. No, I'm being facetious, obviously. What else? One of the things we do is we do question and answer pairs. So you can go to the show and actually go right to that question and answer that you want to know more about. You can watch and listen after the fact. We put audio and video up. So you can hear what I said. You can hear what the questioner said. And please, feel free. There's a comment section there, and you can add your thoughts. So if you say, no, I got a better way, or I know a programmer, oh, this is what I would do, please, please, please be my guest. It's always great to have that added feedback. And by the way, always free. We never charge a subscription for anything. Our podcasts or our website, always free, always available. My goal here is to build a website that's just loaded with useful information that people can go to. And someday I just won't have to do the show anymore. I'll just say, go to the website. It'll be short. It'll be over fast. Joe in Chatsworth, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
That question again. Listen, I am fantastic. As the advanced world traveler that you are, I need a little bit of advice.
All right.
Going out of the country for the very first time ever, going to the UK for a fantastic tour.
Oh, I'm so jealous. You're going to have so much fun.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. But what I need to know from you is, what technology should I not forget to take with me?
There are things I would say don't bother to take with you, like a laptop. Bring a good camera, for sure. The only reason to bring a laptop is to get the pictures off the camera and store them on a external drive. Be careful with your smartphone. I think this is probably the number one tip.
Yes.
Make sure you turn off data roaming. That's the thing that'll reach up and bite you. All the local, the U.S. carriers will work. You know, bring your smartphone and they'll work. The problem is you don't see the meter ticking. And data roaming is extraordinarily expensive. Now, there's two things you can do. One, you can just turn it off and use Wi-Fi. Your hotel will have Wi-Fi. Coffee shops will have Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is everywhere nowadays. So you could just say, look, I'm not going to use this as a data device unless I'm near a Wi-Fi access button, then I will. And that's good to, if you're going to do that, it's good to cache maps. For instance, Google Maps allow you to save an area when you're on Wi-Fi, and they'll still work. The GPS will still work without downloading data. All smartphones have a box somewhere in the settings that say disable data roaming. And if you do that, you're going to be okay. You won't get that big data bill. Phone calls, of course, are an issue, too. It costs a lot, but most people aren't going to be getting a lot of phone calls.
What do you think of the local SIM cards and stuff? I've heard that there are vending machines. You can get a local SIM card.
Yeah. First of all, who's your U.S. carrier?
U.S. carrier is T-Mobile, but I have two phones with them. I have the Galaxy Note 2 and an iPhone through T-Mobile.
Are either of them unlocked?
I don't know the answer.
This is important. Carrier locking means that you can't put a SIM card from anybody but T-Mobile in that phone. Now, T-Mobile, if you bring it to the T-Mobile store, you explain what you're doing, most of these companies will unlock it. If you're in good standing, you've been a good customer, just say, hey, I want to take this iPhone to England. You need to unlock it for me, and they will. Once they've done that, now you're golden. You're absolutely right. There are a number of companies in the UK that will sell data chips. In fact, I know that one of my coworkers, Sarah Lane, used the number 3 has a very low cost flat rate unlimited data plan. I can't remember what it was, 15 pounds, something like that, for a month.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe it was 50, but no, I think it was 15. It was a very good deal. So yes, that's a very good idea. Get the phone unlocked though.
Yeah.
Otherwise you can't use anybody's SIM card in it.
Right. Yeah. If you're on a guided tour, like, I know that you do cruise ships. I don't know if you've ever done bus tours or whatever.
I have.
And you're really guided. Is it really necessary to have a cell phone? Is it something you can just leave behind?
Love having it for a number of reasons. There's got to be some time that you're on your own. It's wonderful if, by the way, you get off the bus and the bus leaves, having a smartphone is probably a good thing. I use Google Maps a lot. I never have to. It used to be you'd worry about getting lost in a foreign capital, but nowadays you just fire up Google Maps. You say, give me walking or transit directions, and you get back to the hotel easy. I use it to find restaurants. In many cities, you can get great restaurant recommendations. It's just a nice thing. It's a good backup. You're right. You know, if you've got somebody holding your hand the whole time, it's probably not something you have to have. But there's definitely times. For instance, if you have an Android phone, there's a Google app called Field Trip that you can turn on as you're traveling around. And as you pass by points of interest, Field Trip will pop up and say, oh, on your left, you don't even need a guide. On your left, you'll see the boys' school where Goodbye, Mr. Chips was made. Or on your right, the famous Canterbury Cathedral. I mean, they will. So there's all sorts of reasons why you might want it, even if you're on a guided tour.
Gotcha. All right.
So here's what I would do at the very least. Make sure you turn off data roaming.
Okay.
And then the rest is up to you how much work you want to go to.
Gotcha. How about power converters for charging your devices?
There's a good question. So in the U.S., all of our plugs are 110 volts.
Mm-hmm.
In the UK and other countries, they're more typically 220.
Now, the first thing to do is look at your power adapters and make sure that they're rated for 110 to 240. Most are. Your laptop will be. But make sure, if you have something that's only rated for 110, you may not bring it. It will blow up. So make sure that it says 110 to 240. Most do. Then you'll have the issue of, well, wait a minute, the plugs are different. So you'll need to get British or UK adapters. They're a three-prong, funny-looking three-prong or two-prong sometimes plug if it's not grounded. You can buy those all over the place, certainly at the airport, even in the UK. Hotels will often have them if you forget. Okay. Are you bringing a laptop?
Well, I had considered it. I actually bought an inexpensive Lenovo T41 just in case. You know, I didn't want to lose Good. Anything important.
So look on the power brick. It will certainly say from Lenovo 110 to 240. It'll be in very fine print. And then you'll just need to get an adapter for that plug. If right. if you've got a device that you have to have that's 110 only, you're going to need a transformer. That's a big You don't want to do that. It's a big thing that hangs off. So that's the difference between a converter and an adapter. In most cases, an adapter is all you need. But if the voltage does not go up to 220, then you're going to need a converter as well. And I don't recommend that.
Okay. And use Pro XDN.
Yeah. You can, absolutely. If you want to get back and watch your Hulu Plus America TV shows, the only way you can do it is use a VPN that says, I'm not in Britain. I'm in Dallas, Texas. And you won't have to worry. Hey, have a great trip. Are you excited?
Thank you very much. Oh, my gosh. First time out of the country, and I'm nearly 50, so this is incredibly exciting for me.
It's about time. Travel is, I may be a little prejudiced, but to me, it's the only thing I want to do when I retire is travel. I love to travel. It's broadening it. You see the world. I interviewed a very famous technology guru on Wednesday, Esther Dyson, and I asked her what the most important thing kids could do growing up to get ready for the modern world. And she said, travel. She said, I was surprised. It wasn't learn how to program, learn how to use a computer. Those are important. But travel, and I think especially true for us Americans, living in America, we kind of are in a cocoon. And it's great to get out of the cocoon and see what the other half lives like. And, boy, there's nothing like it. It's so much fun. You're going to have a great time. It's an adventure. Do bring a great camera. That's the other thing. You got to bring a good camera with you. Most still cameras today do great video, too, and then that means you're fine. You shoot short video. My strong recommendation, shoot as many pictures as you can. Shoot as little video as you can. It's so easy to shoot hours of video you'll never look at. If you just get in the habit of never shooting more than 6 to 10 seconds at a time, much more likely you're going to be using and happy you have that video. Don't shoot an hour long anything. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's hour number three of the Tech Guy Show. Time to answer your questions about computers and the internet, cell phones. I'm sorry, mobiles. We're trying to find a better name for this darn thing. Because it's not a phone as much as it is a pocket computer. So smart, too. Man, these things are great. Last night, I have the Chromecast, which is a little $35 doohickey that Google sells now. You plug it in the back of your TV, and then on your smartphone, you could start a movie, and then you press the Chromecast button, and it puts the movie up on the screen, and you're watching it. It's kind of cool, and you control it from your phone, but you don't have to. You can control it from a different phone. It's pretty cool. These are more and more what we call second screen devices. Like nowadays, it's rare that I watch TV without a tablet, a laptop, or a smartphone in my hand to look up stuff and so forth. And that's one of the things, the Google thing that does is really cool. As you're watching a movie, you can get more information about the stars in the movies. You press a button and it'll pull up more information about that stuff. Who does that? It's called X-Ray. Is it? I can't remember who does that also. But that's really cool. I think people companies like Google are watching what we're doing. And saying, let's give them more information. Let's work with people in the way they watch TV. X-Ray is part of Amazon's streaming. That's right. So X-Ray, if you're streaming a movie from Amazon, which is actually where I mostly get my movies these days, you can use the X-Ray feature to kind of overlay the movie with information about its stars and so forth. It's pretty cool. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Heather Hammond will answer your call. Hammond, Hammond, Hammond. And put you on the air like Andy in Dusseldorf, Germany. Hello, Andy, Leo Laporte. Thanks for hanging on.
And hey, I'm watching your show for a long time. Really enjoy it.
That's great. So, it's so nice to have a viewer in Dusseldorf.
Yes, yeah, watching you via Leoville right now.
Thank you.
I have a question of if I'm buying a DVD and I am downloading it from my computer to a USB memory stick. I was trying to, I have a tablet, a Asus tablet that has a USB port as well.
Right.
And I'm trying to watch the video or the movie, and I can't figure out how to do it.
Yeah. So there are a couple of steps to this. I don't know if you've done all of them. First of all, of course, you can't just copy the files off the DVD. You have to rip the DVD. Even though the DVD has digital files, they're copy protected. So you need to take a program that takes the copy protected video from the DVD, re-encodes it in a way that the Asus can play it back, and in the process removing copy protection. There's a very simple program. It's free. I highly recommend it. It's called Handbrake. It's available on Mac, PC, and Linux. HANDBRAKE, like the handbrake in a car. And in order to use Handbrake to crack the copy protection, you'll also have to download the VideoLAN client, or VLC. That does the copy protection undoing. And VLC is available free from VideoLAN.org. I don't know why. Both of these are French products. They're from France.
Well, what's that, VideoLAN?
VideoLAN, no D. VideoLAN.org. VideoLAN. Because it's the VideoLAN client, written by French schoolboys. And I don't know. It's a school anyway. So that is, you run that on your computer so you put the DVD in, you run Handbrake against it, and you're going to make a single file that is the movie. And yeah, you're going to want to make sure that you make something that's compatible with the tablet. The tablet, of course, can't play every kind of video file back. So chances are good an MP4 will be fine. That'll be one of the choices. The nice thing about Handbrake, it has multiple choices. You might have to play with it. But now the next step is, well, how do we get it?
How do I know what I have? If I'm I bought a DVD, how do I know what it's compatible or what the file is?
Well, you don't have to even worry about that. Handbrake will see the DVD. It'll say, I see the movie. One thing it will ask you is, what do you want? And because there's movie extras, you'll see a number of different video files, some 10 minutes long, some 2 minutes long, but you want the one that's movie length, right? You'll also want to, if you want to get the one with, if there's a German overdubbing, there may be, on the DVD, different languages. You want to make sure you get the right one. That might take some experimentation. There's no way of knowing that unless you try it. But it's pretty straightforward. That's not going to be difficult. The next step is, how do I get this onto the tablet? You're copying it on a USB key. Does the tablet have an SD card slot? What does it have?
It does have the USB card memory stick slot. Yeah.
Okay, good. So that should be pretty straightforward. You just plug it in. If you've made it in a format that the tablet can read, then you would open it with a video player on the tablet and it will be able to read it. I would start with MP4. Don't make it too high quality. Sometimes that chokes tablets. It'll just take a little experimentation. And once you find the right format to use from Handbrake, just always use that one. Handbrake has some presets. It won't have one for the Asus, but it'll have like a tablet preset, and I would start with that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and once you got it on there, you're golden.
Okay.
And you can go on an airplane or whatever, and you can watch your movie.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Andy, so nice to have you listening in Dusseldorf. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Take care. Everything I just described is illegal in the United States, so forget you ever heard that. I'm not kidding. Far be it from me to recommend an illegal procedure. Tim in San Diego, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Good to hear from you. I've got non-32, and I've got my Carbonite, and now I need some help with some hardware, I think.
my sponsors love you. Thank you. And I love you.
I have an Asus laptop, a U56E. Got it about 2.5 years ago, and I'm having a problem with the battery. When I plug it in, this just happened, and it happened suddenly just a few days ago. I plug it in, it says plugged in charging, but it will not charge. When I unplug the AC, it will drain. I've replaced the battery. I've used different AC adapters. I've changed the Microsoft in the devices, the battery method thing. I've done that.
So
that's a trick I can do. I can't figure it out.
I mean, the first thing that I would have guessed, but you've already tried this, is that the battery's dead. You know, after every lithium ion battery has a certain fixed number of charge cycles. Usually it's somewhere around 500. Once you've charged it 500 times, it won't take a charge. And so that's what I thought. But you say you have bought a brand new battery and put it in?
Yeah, it came with a 65% charge on the battery. And I plugged it in and the exact same thing's happening. It's now down to about 38%.
So it's just not charging.
It just will not charge, but it says plugged in charging.
Yeah, boy. And you're using the original adapter that came with the Asus?
I was not, but I do have an original one because my wife has an Asus as well. Plug that in, same problem.
It's the same model Asus she has?
No, it's not, but it's the same voltage and everything else is the same.
Okay.
It's okay. You think it could be the AC adapter?
Well, the best, you know, the only way to rule that out is to use the original adapter that came with it. Your wife's probably is okay, since it is the same. It's the same wattage, right? The same voltage and amperage.
Everything is exactly the same.
Yeah, unfortunately, these laptop manufacturers frequently change adapters. So even though it's the same manufacturer, it may not be the same adapter. In this case, it sounds like it is. Yeah, it sounds like probably what's broken is something internal. That's expensive to fix.
Well, that was exactly what I was hoping.
Yeah, that's expensive because it's on the motherboard. Or the logic board, probably. Since you've replaced the battery and you presumably replaced the power brick and both of them still don't work, then I think, alas, I must say, it's the only thing left is the laptop. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about batteries. This does not apply to lithium ion batteries. And I don't even know if it's very useful, but my friend Steve Gibson, who does our security show, pointed out a YouTube video with an engineer who said there's a way to test your alkaline batteries to see if they're dead. Yes, of course, you could buy an expensive meter to test them. Or, he says, drop it from a short height and see how it bounces. Apparently, if a battery is... Let's try this here on my clipboard. If a battery is dead, doesn't have any juice, it will bounce and fall over.
It will bounce and fall over.
Huh. If it's still got plenty of juice in it, it's much more solid. It will just thunk and stay there. It's hard to do. Like, okay, that one's not empty, right? I should have a mix of empty and not empty batteries. They're falling over, but they're not. It's not as many bounces. And this is a clipboard, and you probably do better on granite or something like that. But we got to try this at home. It's the number of bounces, really. The fall over, it just depends on how steady your hand is. If it bounces once, then it's got juice in it. If it goes brrr, it's empty. Apparently, maybe my guess would be the density of the battery decreases or as it's used up. These all seem fine, right? They say the old batteries outgas and so bounce differently. I never heard that before. These are all good, by the way, according to the bounce test.
Well, now we just need to put them in a transistor radio.
And see if them work. See if they work. It's got to be density, right? I don't know. But apparently it works. Like it. So the video's been making the rounds. It's on YouTube. It's fun. I don't know how useful it is, but it's a fun thing to know. And you can tell your friends next time you're at a party or a bar, you could do a bar. It'd be good for a bar bet. I could tell you if that battery's dead. No, you can't. Yes, I can. By the way, it bounces.
Cliff.
Cliffy Clavin. I tell you. I am a Cliff Clavin. I don't have the accent, but I am. I'm full of factoids.
Did you know?
White socks on.
I'm a big Red Sox fan. Yeah, I do have white socks on.
Oh, great.
Is that a Cliff Clavinism?
Oh, yeah. Well, you would rarely see some of those people.
Yeah, he's sitting
in
at a bar. We're
shot.
Talking about the TV show Cheers.
But when he would walk away or go through the door,
always
it was very
white
noticeable
socks.
That his pants were just a little yeah. too high.
High waters.
And he had white socks on.
High waters and white socks. That's
yep.
that's actually me right now.
It's a good look.
Who should I talk to next, Ms. Heather Hammond?
We have got to talk to Eileen in Huntington Beach, another traveler.
I love it that we've had calls now from England and from Germany. Isn't that awesome?
Oh,
and
yeah.
we've had callers who are going to England. Maybe Eileen will be going to Germany. I don't know. Eileen, hi. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Eileen in Huntington Beach. You're on.
Hello there.
Hey. Welcome to the show.
Boyfriend, and she's on right now. She's
okay, here she comes. Okay. She's running over. Hi, Lee.
Hi, I have a question about a VPN service. I was wondering if you would recommend using Strong VPN.
Yeah, so here's the deal with VPN.
Uh-huh.
Understand what it'll do and what it won't do. Why do you want to use a VPN? It stands for Virtual Private Network.
China.
Ah, well, it may not solve your problem in China because in many cases they block VPNs.
So, are there other ways to get around?
And by the way, it's also, I think, asking for trouble to use a VPN. How long are you going to be in China?
9 months.
Oh, a long time.
Yeah.
And you would like to continue to use Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that that's blocked in China?
Yes, and Skype as well.
They block Skype in China?
I'm not sure about that.
So I was in China about 3 years ago as a tourist, just for a couple of weeks. And when I arrived, it comes and goes, you know. When I arrived, Facebook was working and Twitter was working. By the time I left, it wasn't. I don't know if it was me or what, but Skype worked the whole time. There is a Wikipedia page of what services work and don't work in China. And it has to be constantly updated, right? Because the Chinese government... you know, changes all the time depending on what they're going to allow. And, of course, what they're trying to do is protect their people from exposure to the outside world. So so it depends on the power that be and so forth. The Wikipedia site is called, it's a long name, List of Websites Blocked in the People's Republic of China. And it's changed all the time. So the question is, if I want to use this, how do I? Now, what's interesting in China, I am told, is that the elites, the intellectuals, the college professors, have all figured out how to get around this blocking. And that the Chinese government doesn't really try too hard to prevent that. They're not worried about them.
Okay.
So getting around, it's called the Great Firewall of China.
Yeah.
Sometimes can be done with a VPN. Sometimes can be done with other situations. Strong VPN is good. We have a sponsor, ProXPN, that also works. But what's the problem is you don't know if it's going to be blocked. You know, you don't know when, or maybe they decide to block VPNs. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very useful site before you leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's called greatfire.org.
Okay.
Greatfire.org, and it's all about what you can and can't do in China, and has recommendations about how to get around it. For instance, one of the things I did, this service no longer exists, but I used a service called Posterous. They can't really block email because people need email. So Posterous allowed me to email pictures to Twitter and videos to YouTube, and they couldn't stop it because it was all done via email. But that's for getting stuff out of China, and I presume you want to get stuff into. As of now, Skype is not blocked.
Okay, that's good.
So you'll be able to call home. And I think that's probably the most important one, right?
Yeah. Would it be beneficial if I were to get a VPN here first?
Well,
No,
you should set it up now. You shouldn't get it there. Absolutely. You should set it up now. Make sure it's all working. We have a guy in our chat room whose name is Dude in China. He says he's using a VPN called Astril, Astrill. He says he's used a number of VPNs in China, and that's the one that's worked the best for him.
So
and you said AST
R I L L A S T R I L L .com. I don't know them, and I don't even know if this guy's in China. I mean, anybody could say that, but
okay.
You know, if they're using OpenVPN, and I'm sure they are, you know, that's the service you want, and this works on Macs and Windows. It looks like a good solution. You can even they even sell routers. You know, if you're going to be there 9 months, you might want to get a router so that way you can do it easily. Good luck. What are you going there for?
I'm going to be teaching English.
How exciting! Are you excited?
Yeah, it's very exciting.
The most amazing country. I think you're going to love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's see here. Let's go back to the phones. One last thought. We were talking to Eileen, who's about to go to China, which is wonderful. I'm not sure I want to recommend that you plan to break the laws of a country before you go into the country. VPNs are, I believe, illegal. I would ask the Chinese embassy or the U.S. embassy in China. It probably is imprudent to go into a country, especially if you're going to be there for a long time, planning to break its laws, whether they're enforced or not. And it may be somewhat impolite, even. They choose to block these services. That's kind of the way it is. So try going without. This might be a great experience. Wow, 9 months without Facebook and Twitter. Yikes. You will still have access to email, I guarantee you. You will probably have access to Skype. They've never, as to my knowledge, blocked it. They don't seem to have any intention of doing so. But I think if you are a guest of a country, you're going into a country and you're planning, especially to be there for some time, there might be an ethical obligation to not break the plan to break the laws of the country right up front. Just, you know, not to mention the fact that it gives them some leverage if they decide they don't like you. They've got a reason to kick you out. Just a thought. Jay in Irvine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jay. Whoop, let me turn up the button.
Hello.
Hey, welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Leo.
That's me.
A while back, you were talking about people giving up their privacy and using the various browsers like Internet Explorer and Yahoo and Bing and so forth and Google.
Yeah.
Well, they've made a deal with the government to turn over everything that they keep on you.
We don't know that. We don't know that. They deny that. All of them deny that explicitly.
Yeah, they do, but they're doing it.
Wait a minute. I don't know why you say they are. We don't have evidence that they are. In fact,
even if they're not,
anything you put on the internet can be captured by the government, and we do know they're doing that.
Okay, then let's go around that. What I'm calling about is something that's going like wildfire through the college's kids across the country. I live in a college community. The name of it is Zeekly, Zeekly.com. It's a browser that has agreed to turn over everything to the government, but the secret is they don't keep anything. They do not keep anything.
Doesn't matter. Wait a minute. Dude, you weren't listening. Wait a minute. Dude, listen. The browser is not turning stuff over. You are when you go on the internet. Do you go through your internet service provider? Right?
Yeah, but I'm trying to.
So I don't care if the browser's not turning anything over. That doesn't stop anything.
Okay, go to WorldNet Daily and read about the.
I'm going to hang up on you now. Let me explain this to you very clearly, very precisely, because it's important that people understand this. The browser is a program running on your computer, it's not doing anything. A secure browser is not doing anything. You may say, well, if I do a search on Google, that information is on Google and Google's giving it up. Could be. There's also a DuckDuckGo besides Zeekly. But in my opinion, that's a false sense of security because how do you get to Google or DuckDuckGo or Zeekly over the public internet? Well, don't you think they're watching you there? They don't need to go to Google, Facebook, and Microsoft. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. Google, Facebook, and Microsoft deny it. They say no. And I believe this, by the way. They say we fight as hard as we can, and if at some point we can't fight any harder, we give up the information. So, yeah, that's true. You can they subpoena these companies. But the truth is, and this is a much more scary truth, there's something called upstreaming that the NSA does. We know this. The federal government does, where they capture everything you do, not at Google or Facebook or Microsoft, but as they connect to the internet, as you connect to the internet. All of this stuff is passing through multiple servers. Is your ISP handing over information? If you're at a university using an university's infrastructure, you might ask yourself this. Does a university accept a government grants? How much of the university is run on government money? And then ask yourself, is there any reason why the university wouldn't give the federal government a direct connection into its pipeline? Of course they do. And even if they don't, how does the university get online? Before it reaches Google or Zeekly or anybody else, they get online by going to a next tier up internet service provider, a level three, somebody like that. As far as we know, governments have wiretaps into there. Then they go on the backbones run by Sprint, AT&T, Verizon. Do those companies ever give anything up to the government? Everything. Always. Then it gets to Zeekly. Oh, well, that's good. Zeekly's not saving anything. Who cares? They don't. The NSA's already got it all. So if you want to use Zeekly, go ahead. If it makes you feel better, go ahead. I don't understand why people worry about the fact that Google is getting all your search terms when so is everybody else. So is everybody else. I wish there were a better answer for you, but Zeekly, DuckDuckGo, none of these are protecting you. And frankly, I think Google, it's pretty clear, is fighting as hard as it can without breaking laws to protect you. Absolutely. Let's see. Is this Dean in Oceanside? Yeah, you're next. Hi, Dean. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. I got a question, or actually wanted to ask your opinion about some maybe software. A buddy of mine has an internet streaming radio show, and it's just a small little hobby you friends of us listen to.
So do I, by the way. It's great. I love internet streaming radio shows.
Yeah, it's kind of what you do.
Kind of what I do, yeah.
Yeah, his is music, but I wanted to add maybe a chat room to his radio show somehow so that, you know, the listeners, just like your chat room, can come on and make comments and communicate to one another. So is there any kind of software you recommend, maybe freeware, even open source? I can, you know, play around with code a little bit, maybe run a server. Anything that you recommend that might work well? And then I'll add one more thing. Maybe be able to do it with an iPhone or an Android app later down the road. So
sure.
Connecting from web or mobile.
So I started doing a chat room in, I think it's probably 1992, when I was doing my radio show up in San Francisco. And we've had a chat room ever since. I love it. We usually have between 700 to 1,000 people in there chatting along. And we make it very easy because we use open source, common web standards. The chat room we use is not a proprietary special chat room. It's just IRC, Internet Relay Chat. This technology is so old it predates the World Wide Web. That's why I was using it in 1992, before anybody even knew what the World Wide Web was. It's very simple. You can run your own server. We do, but you don't have to. You can use Freenode, or there's a lot of web servers out there that you can establish an IRC channel on. You would just give out the information about where it lived and what the room is, and easy. And the nice thing is IRC, there are clients for Android, iPhone. There's web-based clients. You can tell your listeners, as we do, if you go to irc.twit.tv, which is our webpage, you can actually use web-based software. They don't need to have any special software installed to get into our IRC. But we also have instructions, and you can read it here, to do it yourself. In fact, most of the information that you'll need is available there at irc.twit.tv to set up your own server. And if you want more, just go into our chat room at twit.tv and ask some questions. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you. Everybody now, let's sing together. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the number, last segment of the show. And that song, you may remember from Mad Magazine. It was one of those little plastic tear-outs in Mad Magazine some, what, 40 years ago.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Because I know, because I was a kid, I remember it very well. It was the song "It's a Gas," and that's the lead singer on the song right there, Dick DiBartolo.
Well, the lead burper,
the lead burper, lead gasser. Hey, Dickie D, Dick DiBartolo's Mad's Maddest writer, and is our Giz Whiz, our gadget fanatic. It's good to see you again.
I'm good. I'm glad, and yeah. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I see the Tetris clock behind you. That's kind of cool.
Oh, that's, yes, yeah. Yes. Oh, no, that's just a Tetris night lamp. Oh. It doesn't tell time.
It couldn't tell time?
No, my cube clock tells time.
Every minute you could just rearrange it to show what time it was.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, I'll be right back.
Every week, Dick brings us crazy gadgets, many of which I end up buying.
Yeah, all right, well, these are not so crazy, but these are useful. It's sort of the first time in many years, actually the first time I know of, that someone has rethought what smoke detector, carbon monoxide detectors should look
this
like.
This is important. Everybody listen up. This, you need to buy this.
Yes, and you know, in New York City, every apartment is, the landlord must install one in every single unit.
Yeah.
It has to be the combo fire alert, a smoke detector, and CO2 detector.
It's a CO detector, and it's really important. Carbon monoxide, exactly. Because furnaces, water heaters, there are a lot of devices in your home that actually, if they malfunction, can kill you by emitting carbon monoxide. You're breathing it, you think it's air, but it's not, and you're...
You know, I'm actually going to put one in my basement. I live over the oil burner.
Exactly.
So I've always had one in my apartment.
A crack in the heat exchanger, and you're a goner.
We're going to put one down there.
So this, what they've done is prevents that.
Exactly. And they've made it a much smaller, much flatter. It's like a half inch high. It's square. It's good looking. But there's two versions.
I'm square and good looking, too. So we have something in common.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know what? Maybe you should sue them for...
I own square and good looking.
You do. So they have a PC900, which is just a straightforward smoke detector, a smoke alarm, a CO detector, or the PC900V, which adds voice. So this is pretty neat. So when you first set it up, it'll tell you to hit the select button when you hear the room you're putting it in. And it gives you a choice of 12 locations or don't specify a location. Then, if there's a fire, it'll say fire in, and it'll say the room you selected. Fire in basement, fire in bedroom one, fire in den.
I like that because, you know, it's sometimes hard to tell where the beeping is coming from.
Exactly. Or it'll say CO alarm, leave room immediately, yeah. CO emergency in kitchen, whatever room it is.
That's good. Does it do that when the battery's dead too? Because that's a real problem.
You know, it has a battery, a low battery alarm.
Does it say low battery in bedroom?
Yes. I don't know if it says
every
low
night
battery,
for
but
me.
It,
every it's a... night.
Yeah, well, you should put a detector in that room. See if that helps.
Oh,
yeah.
No, don't you hate it when there's a beep and you hear this beep every 10 seconds and you have no idea where it's coming from? You have to.
It is
it's
worse
crazy.
In Disneyland, my studio, because I have boxes of gadgets, and somewhere there is a box in which a gadget is dying, which always made me think, when it's running out of battery, why does it start beeping?
Yeah,
why did you
just killing the battery?
Shut up.
Yeah, shut up. Exactly. Die, please.
Shut up. Exactly. So those are, depending on where you buy them, can be under $40 for the voice, under $30 for the non-voice.
And these are from First Alert, which makes
First Alert, kind of the
big name in these things.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But you know what? You should definitely, no matter what brand you get, you should definitely have one of these.
Now, in the chat room, they're saying, and this actually makes sense, that carbon monoxide detectors, because CO sinks, should be low to the ground. That's where they are in my house. And then the fire detectors, because smoke rises, should be high. But it's probably, you know, I don't know if a combined one is as good as one.
Well, you know what? In a lot of cases, just checking online, you can get one of each almost a little bit cheaper than the combo. I think what they were thinking of is that people will be much more apt to just
better
put one up.
Better to have it than nothing at all, I got to say.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah. That's great. First Alert. And what's it called?
It is the PC 900 without voice and PC 900V with voice. And you can see all their stuff at firstalert.com or just check Amazon, and Lowe's carries them too.
Another great place to go, Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.BIZ. He puts notes there for all of his appearances, not on, just on this show, but on our Gizwiz podcast, World News Now, Computer America, all the other stuff. You're a non-paid lackey, apparently.
Yeah, that's it. Over there I am. Absolutely.
Gizwiz.biz also has the What the Heck, What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win a copy of Mad Magazine autographed by this guy right here, which makes it even less valuable. If you can only figure out what is that, there's a close-up picture of something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real thing. And they have not been altered. The photo has not been altered.
Not been altered. Now, I got to point out, there's 12 Mads, autographed Mad magazines for the right answer. There's 24 for the wrong answer. If you do the math, I think you're better off giving a clever wrong answer. You'll be playing for the October issue of Mad magazine. And you have till the end of September or the end of August to apply.
The end of August.
All right.
So another couple of weeks left. 2 weeks. Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Gizwiz.biz. It's fun. It's not, you know, it's not. It's not a, you know, competition. It's just for fun.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people say, listen, I'm overseas. I know you don't send Mads overseas, but I just love being in the game.
Sandy in L.A. I think we got time for one more. Hi, Sandy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. That's your recommendation on the best color printer, all in one.
So there's two ways to go with color. You can laser or inkjet. Inkjet's cheaper up front, but more expensive per page. It also arguably gives you better color. And in fact, it's only with an inkjet you can get photo printing. So do you want to print photos?
Yeah, I'd say then let's go inkjet.
Okay. I am a big fan of a couple of different inkjet printers. Do you want to do an all-in-one? It sounds like you do.
Yes, please.
So that would be color printing, color copying, in effect, because it has a scanner. It's got a scanner on top. You can fax as well. I like the Epson Artisan. Now, Epson's a sponsor, so I'll give you a non-Epson product, too, but that's the one I get, is the Epson Artisan printer. It's Wi-Fi enabled, which means you don't have to connect it to a computer. And that means it's more flexible. You can have multiple things print to it. You can print with an iPad, iPhone, Android device, but you can also print from your computer, and you can connect it anywhere you want.
So that sounds good. What else?
That's the Epson Artisan. I also like the Canon Pixma's, P-I-X-M-A.
Okay.
But, you know, they're all fairly good. For photo printing, the Pixma might be a little bit better.
Okay. The problem I've had is in the past I had an HP printer a couple times, and the rollers seem to be what the issue is, like when I want to stack a couple of things to...
Yeah. I try the Epson Artisan or the Canon Pixma. I think you'll find them much better. Hey, we're out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.